Well, last month here at St. Peter's, we've been tackling some common questions that people ask about God. Does he exist? Why does he allow suffering? What's the point of life? Is there life after death? But this month, we've turned the tables, and we're going to be looking instead at questions that Jesus asks of us. We began with, who do you say I am? Then we looked at, do you love me? And this morning we come to the question that comes in verse 36 of the reading that we just had from the Bible, from Mark's Gospel. Have a look back in the copy of the Bible that you've been given. Verse 36 says this: what good is it for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? Now, even before you exactly know what Jesus is talking about, losing your soul, it sounds like a bad thing to happen to anyone. Just the way Jesus asks the question, it's a question expecting the answer, no. No, it wouldn't be good to gain the world and lose your soul. That would be bad. But I guess the good news this morning is that when you look at the way Jesus poses that question, none of us are in any danger of making this mistake. Because which of us is consciously trying to gain the whole world? It's not a problem that any of us have. Here's a picture of Richard Branson. He's one of the richest men in the world. He's currently worth $5.6 million. He lives on and is the owner of this island in the Caribbean, Necker Island. Looks lovely, and apparently it's even lovelier now he's rebuilt it since the fire a couple of years ago. But it is a tiny island. It's part of the British Virgin Islands, which, when you look at them on a world map, they are the red dot in the red circle. You can hardly see the British Virgin Islands on a map of the world, let alone Necker Island. It's so small. Well, there you go. If even Richard Branson is a long way off gaining the whole world, and he's worth $5.6 million, that means we're all off the hook this morning with this issue that Jesus is raising. Or are we? Is Jesus worrying about something that no one has a problem with? Or is he onto something? See, when you look again at the question that Jesus asks, he's comparing two things in life. One of them is material, and the other is spiritual. Gaining the whole world, it is a reference to material possessions, lots of them, an absolute amount of them. It's the ones that we have, but it's also the ones that we would like to have, the ones we aspire to having, the ones we dream of one day possessing. So it's the flat that we're currently renting, but it's also the one that we hope to buy in a few years' time. It's the bicycle we ride at the moment, but it's the car we would love to drive. Or if we have a car, it's the gleaming 4x4 that we'll one day be driving. And maybe in our dreams, it's the Caribbean island that we will be living on in our retirement. Material things on one hand, and then on the other hand, our souls. The word that's used here for soul is the word psyche. It's the word that we get all of our psychology, psychiatry words from. And if you're very studious, you can look at the bottom of the page and there's a footnote there that tells us that it can also mean life. It can mean our physical existence on the face of this planet. But here it means more than that. It means our personality, our identity. It's what makes you you. That's your soul. So what Jesus is really asking us is, what is the primary focus of your life? What is your life primarily, not exclusively, but primarily all about? Is it about, and is it therefore focused on the material, on material possessions, what you have, what you hope to have? Or is it about your life and focused on your soul? Who you are, what sort of person you are, or what sort of person you would hope to be. Now, as soon as you put the question like that, My guess is that 99% of us would say, my life is about who I am, not what I've got. Because we don't want to sound shallow and materialistic. But in saying that, 97% of us are lying. Now, there may be a few people who are genuinely unconcerned about material possessions, about gaining stuff in this life, having enough stuff for life. But the truth is, most of us aren't like that. We may say that the focus of our lives is our souls, who we are. That's what's most important to us. But the way that we live, what we give our time to, our energy, our thoughts, what we daydream about in our idle moments, they betray us. They show where our priorities really lie. And actually, in living like that, the way most of us choose to live, we do think that is good and that is right because that is how most of us live. So if we were to give an honest answer to Jesus' question, not a lie like we normally do, but an honest answer, at least to the first part of his question, what good is it to gain the whole world? Well, maybe we'd say, actually, Jesus, I think it's quite good. Quite sensible, even, to make the acquisition of material possessions the focus of your life. In moderation, of course, without being greedy. Maybe the whole world is a bit greedy. But a bit of the world, surely that's okay. And part of our justification for thinking like that and then living like that and so answering this question like that is that the bottom line is we need stuff to live in this world. We need food to eat. We need clothes to wear. We need homes to live in. And without all of those material things, we would die. But Jesus knows that about us. He knows that we need material things to live. And he knows that because of that, we find this such a difficult question to answer as humans. Because as humans, we are material creatures. We're flesh and blood. We need material things to live. But as well as having bodies, we have souls. To each one of us, there is a spiritual component to who we are. Body and soul, material and spiritual. And invariably, we find getting the balance right, getting the focus right, impossible. It's a challenge that we all face and that we endlessly get wrong. Which wouldn't be so bad if we're all getting it wrong together. Except, according to Jesus, the consequences for getting it wrong in verse 36 are that we forfeit our souls. By focusing on the material and making that the purpose of our lives, we reach a point, Jesus doesn't say when exactly here, but we reach a point where we lose our souls. We lose our spiritual identity. For now, we're body and soul, bound up together. But there will come a time, says Jesus, when the soul part of us, having been so neglected and abused by us, will not just wither and die, but be removed from us. Not extinguish and simply cease to be, but it'll be lost to our influence and our control over it. That moment, that experience, when it happens, will be very bad indeed. That's implied, isn't it, by the way Jesus asked this question. Verse 36, what good is it for someone to gain the whole world, as much as that, as much as possible, and yet forfeit their soul? To lose something as personal and as precious as that? Well, that wouldn't be good. That would be a disaster of epic proportions. It would be a mistake with eternal consequences to lose control and influence over your own soul. Can you imagine anything as distressing as that? Anything as invasively destructive as losing that part of you that makes you you? I don't know if you saw in the news this week, but scientists have claimed another breakthrough in using human stem cells in pigs to grow human organs for human transplant. And that would have enormous health benefits if they could get it to work perfectly. But unfortunately, there is currently, as the research stands, a risk that human stem cells introduced into the pig could migrate to the pig's brain, with the result that there could be human consciousness trapped inside an animal's body. Can you imagine how awful that would be? Well, it's that scale of awful that Jesus is wanting to communicate when he speaks of forfeiting your soul. Having your identity, your personality, what makes you, you, lost to your control, your influence. And what makes that worse, if this is imaginable, is that once you reach that point, there's nothing you can do to reverse it. Have a look at verse 37, the way he puts it. Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? See, once you've made this mistake, and once you've realized you've made this mistake, and once you're full of regret for making this mistake, even if you have the whole world to offer, you have nothing that can get your soul back. You have nothing of comparable value to what you have lost. Jesus asked the question of us, what good is it for someone to gain the whole world and yet in doing that to forfeit their soul? It would be a terrible, terrible waste, a tragic disaster for anyone. So the obvious question that we need to ask this morning is, how can we make sure we don't make this mistake? Something that we all find so difficult to get right, but something which has got such chilling consequences for when we get it wrong. Well, fortunately, Jesus has got some help for us this morning, and it comes in verse 35. If you look back at the reading from Mark's Gospel, it's on page 1012. He says this, "For whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it." It's not quite perhaps the hope that we help that we might have been hoping for. It's not a nice simple solution to our problem. And if anything, it seems to suggest that there is actually no way out. Because if we are those who want to save our lives, save our souls, if we've recognized the folly of the mistake Jesus has flagged up for us, and if we recognize that before it's too late, we don't want to lose our souls. We want to save them. Well, then Jesus says, you'll definitely lose your soul. For whoever wants to save their soul will lose it. If we lose our souls by focusing on material things, making that the point of our lives, but then if we lose our souls by renouncing that and then focusing on trying to save our souls, either way, we fail. So can we ever save them? Are we ever going to be safe? End of verse 35. Jesus says, "But whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it." See, it turns out there is a way of saving your soul, and it is to be willing to lose your life. Not randomly or casually, as if it didn't really matter, but willingly making your life wholly available, no safeguards, no caveats, no small print, for Jesus and for his message, the message about Jesus. That's what the gospel is. According to him, if we were to make him and the message about him the focus of our lives, to the extent whereby we're willing to lose or forfeit our physical life on this planet, we will save our souls. We'll not lose them. We'll not lose control or influence over them. We'll keep them as part of us, where they belong for all eternity. You don't need to know much or anything of the Morse code to know that the internationally recognized signal for distress at sea was, until 1999, you might not have known that, dot, 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 dash, 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 dot, 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 S-O-S. Or is it sometimes popularly known, save our souls? Well, according to Jesus Christ in Mark's gospel, this is how you do it. Not by focusing on your soul to try and save it, but by focusing on him and the message about him. How do you do that? How do you do that? He tells us how you do it in verse 34, if you look. Then he called the crowd to him, along with his disciples, and said, this is not a secret, it's out there. He wants everyone to know. Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. Three things that mark the life of someone who is focusing their life on Jesus and the message about him. Firstly, he says they deny themselves. That is, they take their hopes and their dreams and their ambitions and their possessions, and they make them all negotiable. They're all on the table. They're all available to Jesus Christ to do with them as he pleases, to use them. They serve him, not them, with everything that they are and everything that they have. They deny themselves. Second, they take up their cross, which is not some minor or even major inconvenience in life. You know, we all have our crosses to bear. Taking up your cross is a willingness. It's this willingness to lose, to forfeit your physical life because you see something bigger, something better than that on offer. All over the world, Christians are doing that even today, forfeiting their physical existence as followers of Jesus Christ. But it's not just death that Jesus has in mind here. It's everything leading up to and including death. It's the willingness to be known publicly as a follower of Jesus. It's a willingness, therefore, to be mocked and ridiculed and belittled as a follower of Jesus. To be regarded as somewhat intellectually inferior or mentally deficient or morally regressive because you're a follower of Jesus. The third mark of a life focused on Jesus, he says, is someone who simply follows him. Follow me. Walk the path I trod in humble obedience to my heavenly Father. The life of a follower of Jesus is a life that is willing to end up where he ended up. He ended up on a cross on a hill outside of Jerusalem, losing his life to save not his soul, but the souls of all who follow him. How do we save our souls? By having a life focused not on material things, not even a life focused on spiritual things, but having a life focused on Jesus Christ and the message about him. That is what Simon and Caroline have today signed Otley up to. A life like that. Why would two otherwise sane, sensible, loving parents sign their child up to a life like that? Well, it's because they're utterly convinced that what Jesus Christ is saying here is true. It's because that's the life they've signed up to. Let me end with the story of someone else who believed this was true and who lived like it too. Jim Elliot was a follower of Jesus Christ. His self-denial, his taking up his cross, led him to take the message of Jesus to a remote tribe deep in the rainforest of Ecuador. The Huarani Indians had almost no previous contact with the outside world. On the 8th of January 1956, Jim Elliot and four other Christians landed in a small plane in the jungle beside a river to meet them, to share with them the message of Jesus Christ. As they stepped from the plane, before they had a chance to say anything, they were murdered, and their bodies were thrown in the river. An entry in Jim Elliot's journal, written 6 years before his death, was a reflection on the question that we're considering this morning that Jesus asks in Mark chapter 8, verse 36. He wrote this: "He is no fool who gives up what he cannot keep to gain that which he cannot lose." What good is it for someone to gain the whole world that they will lose and yet forfeit their soul? It's no good at all. It's a disaster. But whoever wants to save their soul will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel, says Jesus, will save it. How are you living your life? What are you doing with your life? What's the point, the purpose of your life? This morning, Jesus is inviting us to do a cost-benefit analysis of how we're living our lives, to see the cost of making a mistake like this, but also to see the cost of becoming a follower of his. He wants us to do that analysis so that we can make a choice. Well, why don't we take a few moments of quiet to reflect on this question that Jesus asks and our answer to it? There's a lot riding on it.